Beetroot juice, used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, caused waves at the last Olympics. Clinical studies proved 2 glasses of beetroot juice per day could increase stamina by 16%. I've been using it, and this product is excellent. Beets are a nutrition goldmine, so call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. Get a 30-day supply free. That's 800-738-2198 or intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is an opportunity for you to pose your questions directly to us. For a lot of you, this is your favorite feature because you never know what we're going to tackle, and it's very likely that amidst the potpourri of issues that we cover, something will turn up that's relevant to the health of you or a loved one. So email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we don't guarantee that we'll answer every single question, but we'll do our best, especially if your questions are concise and of general interest, radioprogram@AOL.com. For new listeners, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis, working with patients here in New York City. And she's a registered dietitian, and she's earned an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Very well, thanks. So it looks like spring has finally turned the corner after some, the rough patch. Another couple of snow flurries, cold weather last week.
Yeah.
Every time it's cold, I go, this is it.
That's the last time.
And I packed up my, my real heavy-duty winter coats, which some years don't even get hardly any action, but this year I actually give away one of them, but they were well worn, and so I packed them away. But then I just kept in reserve one sort of intermediate coat for the cold weather, because you never know.
You never know exactly.
March is a funny month.
It is.
So
April might be funnier. So
might get a little April Fool's surprise. We certainly did last year. It really dragged on. So hopefully we've turned the corner and the coldest of the cold spells behind us. All right. So, by the way, for our listening audience, you, for all the world, you might be listening to us in Mozambique, where the temperature is 90 degrees.
I'll take it.
we have listeners all over the world, but we are just New Yorkers, and New Yorkers complain, and we have a right to complain. And that's what we do. We moan and groan about our climate and the city, but it's a love-hate relationship. All right. So, Before we get to our questions, one of the big stories this week, and it's featured in Time magazine, it's entitled "What Diet Soda Does to Belly Fat," and hey, Layla, you and I called it because we've been talking about this for a really long time. More evidence that diet soda contributes to weight gain, not weight loss. And this, this is a new study, yet another study, because for some people this is old news. If you've been listening to us and you're a faithful follower of the Intelligent Medicine podcasts and you read our newsletter, we've written several articles on this. I wrote an article several months ago on this subject, and I know you have. Mm-hmm. But yet again, a new study published in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society found that people who drank diet soda gained almost triple the abdominal fat.
Yeah. Triple. That's something, isn't it?
Over 9 years. Over 9 years.
Diet soda.
And by the way, this is the very audience that, a little more virtuous, people who are older, they got the message about sugar, so they're going to get diet soda, right? And they're going to be virtuous. And we know a lot of people like that. The study analyzed data from 749 people ages 65 and older who were asked every couple of years how many cans of soda they drank a day and how many of those sodas were diet or regular. And the answers were predictive of abdominal fat gain. People who didn't drink diet soda gained about just 0.8 inches, just less than an inch around their waist over the study period over 9 years. And indeed, people over time, 9 years, people are expected to gain. That's the trend. People gain weight. So those people gained, the ones who didn't drink diet soda gained an inch. Those who drank diet soda gained 3.2 inches.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that.
You don't want that, right?
No. No, okay. We're not surprised. You know, I have too many clients that come here. They're looking to lose weight. We get them on the right diet for their unique biochemistry. And then they hit a plateau fairly quickly. We investigate, and then we find a diet soda in there. Once we remove the diet soda, which can be very hard for a lot of people to give up because they miss the sweetness, the carbonation, all of that, we replace that with seltzer, voila, they're able to continue losing weight. The plateau is over. So diet soda really does it.
You know, I haven't had diet soda in a couple of years, but, I was traveling, and somebody was with ordered diet soda. They said, you want a sip? And I said, sure. And it is like ambrosia. It is so good. You know, it's like it was all my willpower not to order a diet soda.
Yeah.
But I stuck with club soda. So, I don't know. I mean, look, sometimes, you know.
I mean, once in a while, you can do anything you want.
Yeah, you can indulge. But we're talking about people who drank the most.
Yeah.
You know, okay, and then the people who are intermediate or occasional drinkers of diet soda, they gained about 1.8 inches. So it was actually, you know, they call this in medicine a dose response effect. You know, when you study toxicity like arsenic, you know, the dose is the poison, and the more you consume, the worse it is for you. So that's very, very proof positive of a causal relationship in terms of diet. And what is it about diet? So, well, one, it may trick you into craving more sweets, right?
Well, there is that, because, listen, even the artificial sweeteners will provoke an insulin response.
Yep.
Insulin is a fat storage maker. It's a fat storage hormone. That's precisely what happens there. And, you know, the idea that, oh, I'm not getting any calories here, so I could get a little more, some more calories elsewhere, it gives people some leeway to eat more food or take in more calories or other carbohydrates, so that's a problem too.
But there may be something else at work here. A recent study, I believe it was done in mice, showed that artificial sweeteners change the gut bacteria of mice in ways that make them more insulin resistant. You know, your microbiome actually has something to do with your metabolism. And it may be that by poisoning the gut bacteria in some way, it changes their composition, and it makes your intestinal flora either influence you hormonally, or maybe the bacteria process food differently, and that leads to weight gain. You know, the intestinal flora is now implicated as a factor in weight gain, and you can transfer the flora of a fat mouse to a skinny mouse and make the skinny mouse fat.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think there was a case study of somebody who had gotten a fecal transplant from an obese person.
Yes.
And they became obese. Wow.
Whoops. Yeah.
Very oops.
Yeah.
Wait, where is that fecal transplant coming from? I want to know who was the owner of that.
And it's... Yeah. Despite the fact that there's no sugar in these diet sodas, they appear to cause your levels of leptin to drop. And leptin is actually an appetite-regulating hormone.
Yeah.
So leptin resistance or decrease in leptin is associated with weight gain.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's amazing. You know, we engineer these products. I mean, how long have these products been around? For like 30, 40 years. But it took this long for problems to emerge. I mean, it's utterly plausible, like no calories, no weight gain, right? I mean, that makes sense.
That's but like it, the idea of free foods. You can eat as many of these foods as you wish. Yeah.
Exactly.
But
it turns out not to be the case. And that's why we need to, I mean, that's what makes me concerned about a lot of artificial things like GMOs. I mean, it's like, oh, it's fine. It's, you know, there's no evidence of harm. But how long have the experiments lasted?
We're eating pesticides.
Literally.
The GMOs are literally pesticides, right? That's a scary thought.
Some of them generate pesticides, can generate pesticides, and there may be some gene exchange between the DNA of the GMO foods and our gut bacteria, so that our gut bacteria theoretically might manufacture pesticides in our gastrointestinal tracts, and or, you know, who knows, unforeseen consequences, because who could have seen this coming with diet sodas when they invented them?
And, you know, a lot of people think that GMOs are only about corn and soy, but guess what? Zucchini, canola oil. You know, a lot of people aren't aware. They're using canola oil thinking it's healthy, but much of it is GMO at this point. And so is a lot of zucchini. Wow.
Wow.
That was news to me about the zucchini.
More and more things, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's...
I won't be putting that on the grill this summer. How's that? Unless it's organic.
grow them in your own yard. That way you can
right.
be sure. Yep.
Right.
So they grow like crazy, but they need a lot of water.
Mm. Oh, that's okay. Yeah. First, I need a yard.
That's right.
Well, yeah. Do it on the fire escape.
You mean a vacation place you go to for a couple of weeks every summer? That's not enough time to grow them? You know, you can plant
no,
the seeds.
No, oh. That's only a month. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope you get your place soon. All right. So, what's our first question?
Let's see. We've got an email from Randy. Dr. Hoffman, I have a genetic mutation where I don't break down histamine. I've just started to taper off foods that contain histamine or produce histamine. Are there any supplements I could take that will help with this itching? As this list of foods contains almost everything I like. Do I have to go back to just eating meat and potatoes? Last, I take a lot of fish oil. Do you know fish oil contains histamine? And if so, are there any fish oil supplements that have had the histamine removed?
This is really a great question. It opens up a whole new area that we're just beginning to learn more about. So let's talk about histamine. Now, first of all, what does histamine do? Well, histamine is something that circulates around the body, and it's responsible for allergic reactions. But it's also essential for us. So, you know, you need a certain level of histamine to do a variety of things. So so antihistamines obviously are there to block histamine. So everybody knows what an antihistamine does. It sort of dries you up. Histamines also help us produce mucus. And so what are the signs that you're in histamine overload? Well, there's, you know, a multitude of signs. You know, you sneeze, you wheeze, but you may also have other things that are an itch, certainly itchiness, general itchiness is sometimes a sign of excess histamine. Diarrhea is a sign of that.
Sure.
Swelling, especially of the mouth and face, any kind of inflammatory condition, of course, asthma, heartburn or GERD, bloating, even fatigue
all kinds of symptoms. Yeah.
Yeah, even fatigue and joint and muscle pain can be a sign of, you know, that you're overloaded with histamine. The problems are legion. Now, not everybody who suffers from these things suffers from a histamine overload, but you know, a couple of ways that you can get histamine. You know, first of all, your body makes it, but also there are some foods that are rich in histamine that we, you know, I know that you tell people who have a lot of allergies to go on a low histamine diet.
There are many foods that are rich in histamine, and there are other foods that are histamine releasing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There are two aspects. One, the foods contain histamine, and other, the foods that don't contain histamine, but they may trigger the release of histamine. So you want to go through some of that?
Yeah. I'll go briefly down the list. The histamine-containing foods, anchovies, avocado, beer.
Like aged meats, right?
Meats.
Right.
Fermented beverages, eggplant, fish, jams and preserves, processed meat, sour cream, spinach, sauerkraut, yogurt, vinegars, wines, any foods containing sulfites, and histamine-releasing foods include certain things like bananas.
They don't have so much histamine, but they release histamine, right?
They release histamine.
Yeah.
Things like chocolate, eggs, milk, papaya, pineapple.
I'm in trouble with chocolate.
It's a lot. And histamine-releasing foods are also leftovers. Anything that we're storing in the refrigerator, you know, more than a day or so, will also provoke histamine.
Did we say aged cheese? Because that's a big...
Aged cheeses, definitely.
What types of cheese? Like Parmesan and things like that?
Absolutely. Could be Swiss, could be cheddar.
Right.
Any of those.
And, okay.
Limburger. Moldy ones, too.
Okay, so the number one, you can have foods that liberate your histamine and other foods that contain histamine. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
So number two, there is this substance called DAO. And DAO, you want to tell us a little bit about DAO?
Yeah. DAO is diamine oxidase.
Right.
That's an enzyme that breaks down histamine in the body.
So by the way, we're only aware of this since around the year 2001 it was first discovered. So it's a new thing.
Yeah. It's now in a supplement for those of us who have trouble with too much histamine or we're eating too many foods that are causing, you know, an overload of histamine.
So it doesn't inhibit histamine. It helps to break it down. It actually helps to your body to break it down more rapidly, right?
Right. Right. Exactly.
And it appears that there's a genetic basis for DAO insufficiency. And we're trying to, you know, we're having a lot of difficulty in the state of New York getting some of the tests that we want. I know there's a test available nationally, but we're going to see if we can track down a test that we can use with our patients to see if they have DAO insufficiency. Then we would be able to give them a DAO with meals to help them avoid food intolerance. It's sort of like something that might be a blocker for food allergy, and that would be very useful for some people. So, and it's natural. It's a natural substance. It's available from a variety of companies. One of the companies, you have a name of a product?
Yeah,
there?
One of the companies is Swanson.
Right.
That's the only one I know of thus far, but I know there are more.
There's another one called Histamine Scavenger, and there's a variety of products there. Now, you know, the other aspect to that is, and we're getting a little technical here, but we have some wonky listeners. A lot of our listeners are now attuned to methylation. Methylation means getting the right B vitamins to make your weak pathways work. And some people have mutations. They have C677 or 1298. Either MTHFR polymorphisms, or which cause them to require more of the active B vitamins, like methylfolate, methyl B12, B6, and perhaps some other things. And it actually appears that people with poor methylation may be prone to DAO insufficiency. So one way you can help to rev the DAO pathway is through those B vitamins. It's complicated, and we're just beginning to understand these relationships.
Yeah.
But it does, I mean, what it suggests is that it provides us with some way of addressing the problems of super allergic people. There's some people who seem, don't you think, Layla, they seem almost like allergic to the world.
Very, very, very sensitive.
Yeah, so.
Then we start looking for leaky gut.
That, exactly. Very important.
Yeah. Yeah, very important to look at that. We might look for candida overgrowth because those people are also sensitive. And the candida overgrowth can also cause a leaky gut.
Yes.
Interestingly,
the DAO is produced in the villi, which is the little tiny fingers, microscopic fingers that are present in the small intestine. So anything that irritates the gut, like gluten intolerance, celiac disease, that is going to destroy your capacity to manufacture DAO. And hence, that's why we sometimes when we see patients, they're allergic to a million foods. If we pull out gluten, then we manage to reduce their overall sensitivity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Their gut repairs and they become less sensitive. It's sort of like the key to the Pandora's box that opens up
in the same vein, if we find somebody with a lot of yeast and they're allergic to everything, once we deal with the candida, those sensitivities diminish as well. So, yeah. Sometimes the food allergy is just not real allergy, but a lot of noise, yet they're still reacting.
So when we go on and on in these long answers, did we actually answer this guy's question? We asked about fish.
Yeah.
He asked about fish oil.
It contains histamine, so right. We have to assume that fish oil will cause a reaction in Randy because he's got the SNP.
I might dissent a little bit from that. I do agree that one of the, you know, for example, I think tuna has a very high level of histamine, and actually,
sort
especially
of mackerel, sardine, anchovy.
But if it's a purified, a molecularly distilled form of fish oil, I actually think that might help stabilize the membranes and make the membranes less likely to be fragile, because basically you've got basophils which are associated with the release of histamine. And these cells, if they're very, very on a hair trigger, they can literally burst and, you know, release their histamine. So we want to stabilize the membranes. Maybe fish oil could help that. It does seem to be a membrane stabilizer in other respects. So
fish
you know,
oil of good quality, definitely.
Yeah. And you know, there's some people who are deadly allergic to fish. usually they are not allergic to fish oil. We have to be careful in administering it, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah. So, Randy, look into the supplement, Daosin, D-A-O-S-I-N. So that might be helpful. Or look into taking the supplement that contains the diamine oxidase. So that could help.
Yeah, great question.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something that is an evolution, but I think more and more integrated practitioners are coming to realize what's going on with this. And we provide an alternative sometimes to conventional allergists who are really stymied by these multiple symptoms, and they just say avoid a million foods, use an EpiPen, or take tons of medication.
Avoid a million foods, that's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
Unless it's life-threatening, unless it's anaphylaxis, certainly.
Yeah. Our goal is, you know, you eliminate the foods initially to provide healing, and then you can reintroduce them. You know, we just did a very interesting interview on the subject of the elimination diet with a naturopath, Tom Malter. And he has really written an excellent book about that process of elimination by which you find the foods that you're intolerant. But we both agreed that the goal is not to have you on a lifelong program of deprivation or elimination. The goal is to find the trigger foods, eliminate them, and then gradually, once healing occurs, reacquire as many foods as you can. You may have to stay off of a few. I mean, we all want people to stay off of junk and chemicalized foods,
of course,
you know, but there may, and you know, tons of sugar. But we would like. I mean, we're not. We don't just delight in being food police. You know, much as we.
No, I certainly don't delight in being food police.
You know, it's a tough job telling people not to do this and not to do that. But it's sometimes less is more in the long run. A little deprivation up front can lead to more permanent resolution of problems. So that's what we're trying to do. And then through the use of you know, some of these other techniques, healing the gut, preventing leaky gut syndrome, reducing intestinal permeability, perhaps using a DAO supplement and other supplements, we can then recondition the body to become less overall allergic. On that note, I'd like to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And when we return, give us a little bit of a preview of what some of the questions are that we're going to address.
Is pomegranate juice is as good as beet juice for raising nitric oxide levels?
Wow. Okay. Mm. Okay. Well, we'll tackle that question when we return.
Yeah.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. We're answering your questions. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.